Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, Cancer Network's Gina Morrow spoke with Dr. Yoshi Umemura of the Ivy Brain Tumor Center about her professional and personal advancements in the brain cancer field. On top of progressing in neuro-oncology research through multidisciplinary collaboration at her institution, Umemura highlighted how mentorship fueled her individual growth in the field and underscored the importance of paying it forward by offering guidance to the next generation of researchers.
First off, I wanted to ask you, what led you into this field of brain cancer treatment?
I was first a neurologist. I fell in love with the brain and how the brain works and how the physicians actually still perform physical exams and take history, and that's how we diagnose patients. And I really enjoy that human aspect of medicine in the era of a lot of testing. So first and foremost, I'm a neurologist. And after becoming a neurologist, I picked the neuro-oncology subspecialty because it's a field where you form quite a close connection with the patients if they allow you to. You see them quite often. You're part of their team. They let you be part of their treatment team. And there's just so much to be done. There's not much worse we can do in this field, unfortunately, right now, because we can only go up with how much we can do in clinical trials and treatment. And it gave me a sense of purpose in my career, where it wasn't just an initial curiosity in medicine, but gave me something to look forward to work towards as I go on day to day.
I think that makes a lot of sense. In terms of perhaps research that you've been most proud of, what you've done in your career so far, is there anything that you'd like to highlight?
So what I'm most proud of in clinical research is not necessarily one compound or one medication. I think the approach I have used that I think has worked out, you know, as a early investigator coming out of training, I was really searching to see what my niche would be. And I decided to take more of an approach of collaborative approach, where I would try as the best I can in terms of collaborating with people far and wide. So not just location, but including the field. So someone who does not see patient and perhaps just be in the lab, or someone in a different specialty. And by doing that, kind of using my strength as kind of human connection aspect, I was able to break down some walls and getting things done, not just within my own little bubble, but create a bigger bubble, or, you know, to pop the bubble, so to speak, and to do a bit more of a collaborative aspect in performing clinical trials and getting things done. And by doing that, I think the biggest kind of tangible result that I could see was during the height of the pandemic. I was trying to open my first investigator-initiated trial, meaning not something that's already been open where I'm just trying to open as a site. It was a clinical trial. We're trying to start from writing the protocol. And we were able to open that in the midst of the pandemic, where a lot of people were having red tapes, extra red tapes, for a good reason. Because we had so many people working together and had shared purpose and shared goals. And I do think being able to open a trial in a record speed during a extra challenging period just shows that the collaborative aspect really does add to getting things done.
I'm really glad you mentioned that. I think there's something important to mention about the multidisciplinary care of, not even brain cancer aside, really just, you know, all cancer care specialties. But I think that sometimes we forget the importance of having, whether it's like a palliative care or the importance of a nurse practitioner or just all these other elements, in addition to obviously whoever somebody's oncologist is. Can you kind of speak maybe a little bit to that, like just like the importance of this more collaborative, perhaps more multidisciplinary approach to caring for these patients?
So the multidisciplinary, a lot of times we think, you know, the easy thing to think about is different discipline, like neuro-oncologists, radiation oncologists, medical oncologists, you know, epileptic, different physicians, neurosurgeons. But as you mentioned, kind of going wider, speech therapist, physical therapist, people who are doing intraoperative monitoring, our nurses, the people who are answering the phone calls, the call centers, all of these aspects really touch the patients so deeply in their day-to-day care. And their experience in their day-to-day care obviously affect how they perceive clinical trials and their care if the team is actually, if we have their back, so to speak, and building that trust. So I do think every aspect of that is very important. I do recall some patients, a lot of patients actually comment on the things that you don't see. The valet person who parked their car or someone who gets their wheelchair for them every time they come. And I think those are the people who actually make more impact on their day oftentimes when they come to a medical center, which is not a fun place to be. And I think just really keeping those things in mind, even for clinical trials, especially for clinical trials, is important where, sometimes we get swallowed up with FDAs and regulations, but really thinking about when we're building the calendar and building these protocols, allowing aspect that makes patients be able to live their lives while they go on a clinical trial, really important. Allowing telemedicine, allowing at home visit, if there's anything that we can do. Of course, there are limitations, but I think having that multidisciplinary approach, but really thinking about all the aspect of the patient's lives that we come across, I think is very important.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. Turning to maybe what you're working on currently, what are you really excited about in the research land right now?
We are very, I think, at the Ivy Brain Tumor Center and Barrow Neurological Institute, what we're right now currently very excited about is we have a phase three clinical trial that we are sponsoring. I'm the principal investigator as our site at the Ivy Brain Tumor Center, but as our institution, we're sponsoring this multinational, international trial. Of course, we're excited about the study itself, but I think what's most exciting is the way it happened. Phase three clinical trial often takes years and years, sometimes over a decade, to get to from a phase zero component, phase zero, phase one, phase two, phase three. It takes forever. Even just opening one phase two, three study, sometimes from talking about the concept to getting it across to the start line, not even the finish, but to the start line can take years and years. And because we have a unique platform where we try to take away some red tape safely by, again, some of the multidisciplinary kind of creative minds that we have here, how the platform is set, where we move, push past from the early phase to late phase quickly, we were able to move it past just in a few years' time from phase zero, phase two trial to a phase three international trial. And I think having that platform and proving that we can actually make that happen is extremely exciting because it's not going to be just one drug or one trial that's going to make a difference. There's going to be, when there is a one positive trial or negative trial, there are a lot of follow-up questions and follow-up trials. And we can't be taking 15, 30 years just to answer one simple question. And we need to be able to do a lot of trials safely and effectively. And to have that platform to show that we can actually do this much quicker than traditional method is very exciting.
Thank you. Do you have the name of that phase three trial? Because I'd love to be able to add that in.
Sure. The phase three trial, the cute acronym name is GlioFocus. It's
Perfect.
a phase three clinical trial where we are randomizing glioblastoma patients who have been newly diagnosed after surgery before they do radiation. And we are only limiting to unmethylated glioblastoma, meaning these are patients who oftentimes chemotherapy effectiveness is a bit questionable. So we randomize patients to get the traditional chemotherapy with radiation versus radiation with a different drug called niraparib. And so they are randomized.
That's great. I also spoke with Dr. Sinai a couple of weeks ago also about the GlioFocus trial. So he was also very excited about it. Thank you. So we have snow coming up towards the end of November, I believe. Are you aware of anything that might be coming out of the meeting already that you would just like to say that you're excited about? You're anticipating to seeing more information about it?
Yeah, I think There are a few things, I think touching upon different buckets of things. Glioblastoma, there are so many, most of the clinical trials are geared towards glioblastoma, in SNO. So going to the clinical trial session and listening to all the things that are coming up in the glioblastoma realm is exciting. But I am also very much looking forward to kind of follow-up updates on a longer-term result from the INDIGO study. I was one of the investigator at my prior institution. And it's all the buzz right now with the new approval of vorasidenib. I think once a day, at least I have a patient who asks me about it. And I think definitely having more data will help me guide their questions and how to go about how to use it more than just the guideline use, of course. So I think the more data will be more very much welcome, and I believe there'll be some updated result to be presented. Other things that I'd be excited about, I think there is lymphoma track this SNO, and that is a bit of neglected, not neglected. Primary CNS lymphoma or central nervous system lymphoma is quite a rare disease. And even within neuro-oncology, not every clinic will see those patients. Oftentimes they're seen by systemic cancer, medical oncologists, lymphoma specialists. And it's a rare disease, and not a lot of people specialize in it, but there are quite a few. And it's actually oftentimes a curable disease. And CNS lymphoma has a special place in my heart. I think just the patients that I've met over the years who have become, let me be part of their team from the early on. And when I saw them every other week, sometimes every day in the hospital, to seeing them go back to their lives and having grandchildren or getting married. And I think, but it's still a very deadly disease when they recur. And there still needs to be a lot of studies that needs to happen. And I'm excited to see that there is a specific track for that at this SNO meeting.
That's great. Thank you. So I'd like to ask just a couple questions of you outside of the research, but as a person and as somebody who's obviously worked extremely hard to get to where you are in the field, I've read a lot of things over time of just neuro-oncology being a very male-dominated field, as there are with certain other cancer specialties, as we're well aware of. So what has that been like to you to kind of, obviously put yourself out there as a female and really, power through with like your research and stand up for what you believe in? And what has that been like? Any kind of challenges that you had to overcome as just being a woman in the field?
So I must admit, I feel that I have lived a life of feeling like an outsider. I'm an immigrant. My name is Yoshi Umemura. It's not a common name. I think if people Google that name, you just get me as a neurologist. You don't get really anybody else in the US or anywhere else for that matter. But I grew up in Japan in a Taiwanese family. I grew up feeling like an outsider. When I moved to the US in high school years, having to learn English, I felt like an outsider. I didn't know English until I was 16. When I went to medical school, when I went into residency, you move around a lot. So I think I know how to operate as a feeling like an outsider. I am aware, and I have witnessed and experienced what it's like to be an outsider, not outside of medicine, but also in medicine. As you say, there are more men. It's not just in medicine. There are other fields like that. And especially as you go up on the leadership positions, there are even more men. Neurology is not actually a male-dominated specialty. Neurology has a lot of women in it. I have been fortunate to have multiple role models in female, my residency mentor, my fellowship chair, Dr. DeAngelis, and my prior institution, the neurosurgery chair and neurology chair have been very strong female role model for me, and I've had female colleagues. So I never really felt that being a female has really stopped me because I've had a lot of people guide me how to operate as an outsider. But I do recognize that we're not the majority. I also have had a male mentor who's been a female ally, right? So I think I have been very, very fortunate. With that said, I think I have a unique challenge that I feel myself as in a female leadership position compared to male, that when I'm building a division, when I'm talking to my faculty, I want to try to think outside a box rather than saying, like, this is how it's being done, this is how it should be done. I want to be in that generation where we're actually being mindful of why the rules are made and why the policies are made, and keeping mind everyone's life. It's not just women, it's men too. A lot of men don't get paternity leave. They should. That affect the women in their lives, right? We live in a country where maternity leave and paternity leaves are actually very minimal compared to the rest of the progressive countries. So, and in medicine, a lot of those things are actually not covered or built in. And we are very used to just toughen it out as in medicine. And I am having to learn myself that's not the way to live or to work or to lead. And I think that's a bit of a unique challenge that I am noticing and working on myself.
You know, I it's interesting you brought up the maternity leave. I was just listening to a podcast the other day, and it said that the US is only one of 8 countries in the whole world that doesn't offer universal, like, paid family leave. And I never knew that, but it I know that we kind of everybody's a little bit different regardless of what state you might live in, but I think the country as a whole, I don't know about you, I just was like blown away by that. I'm like, wow, okay.
And you know, I mean, I myself do not have children, full disclosure, but I have covered for men and women, you know, and I think, you know, of course, maternity leave, it's not long enough, but it is longer than paternity leave. But just imagining when my senior residents or fellows come back from their 2 or 3 weeks of paternity leave, I'm just wondering what their home is like when they come back, you know? So I don't think it's just for women. I think it's for both genders. I think that gender equality obviously goes both ways. And there are also families who are not traditional in their setup. You know, some people are single parents, some people are same gender parents, and those are all very challenging. And I think we are still at the level we're still just figuring out the traditional platform. And I think we're at the era we need to really think much more and broadly. And, you know, as physicians, if we don't take care of ourselves, one day we're going to break, and then we won't be able to take care of our patients the best we can.
So well said. Thank you. A lot of really good points there. My last question that I had here really kind of just focuses on the future. And I know you mentioned that you've had some really wonderful mentors. What about what can you say about the next generation of, regardless of gender, but the next generation of oncologists, neuro-oncologists coming through? What advice can you give them? What do you try to do with them in terms of, like, mentorship? Any advice you can share there?
I have spoken with some people who felt that they lacked mentor. And what I've common, the common things that I hear is that, oh, there wasn't anyone like that at my institution. And I think the best advice I can give them is just ask. You know, when you're at a conference, when you meet someone you think you might click, you might want, you're intrigued about, you're impressed about, you know, you can just find an email, shoot an email, ask them if they would be open to chatting with you about a question or mentoring you. You know, I have multiple outside of my institution mentors, and I have been very fortunate to have that. But at the same time, I've asked, right? The worst thing that's going to happen is they're too busy, right? No one is going to make you feel terrible about yourself just because you showed an initiative to get a mentor. I think, and pay it forward, always be open to mentor others. And I think that's the only way to move forward. And I think just asking, you know, I don't limit yourself to just what's around you. It goes to the collaborative aspect, how to operate as an outsider. You're not an outsider as long as you make the connection. You can just wedge yourself in. And I think just ask.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O. or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer-Network.